And welcome to the program, Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And, well, here we are. Happy Sunday. Everybody, I think, has survived the weekend gently. And I'll tell you, for some people, this weekend now is a slow reality of setting in. Some bad news. Okay, and maybe you know what I'm talking about if you are one of the roughly two-thirds of people who took the February California bar exam and failed. So, okay, well, but so I'm not going to bore you too much with the statistics, but do you know, okay, so to be a lawyer in any state, you need to be licensed by the state bar of that state. And it almost always means that you've got to take an exam. You've got to sit for the bar exam. And do you know which bar exam, by the way, is the hardest in the country? And they, judging by how many people fail it, right? The percentages. It's California, of course. Yes, of course. Everything's difficult in California. They don't make it easy, and they don't make it easy by design. I mean, you know, it's the organizations run by lawyers, and what do lawyers want? They don't want other lawyers competing with them. So once you get into the club, you want to keep as many people out. And that's kind of what licensing is. And we're going to talk about that a little more. But before I get there, I have to talk about this for a second. So what's it like taking the bar exam? People always ask me this. And it's something like getting checked into San Quentin. I mean, I've never experienced anything like it. I took the test in Ontario, which is a really popular test center. And if you live in Ontario, I'm sorry for what I'm going to say right now, but it sucks there. Okay? And if you're mad and everything, just let me tell you this. Ontario Convention Center is like if I ever drive by that place, I still get hives. I still break out in a rash over my experiences there. So what did I do? What happened? I went. The bar exam is 3 days. The test, it's 3 days. And it's 3 hours, two sessions of 3 hours each day. So it goes roughly 9 to noon and 2 to 5. But you have to be there in your seat basically an hour before. So you end up being in the room, and then they have to collect all the tests before they let you out of the room. So you're in there from, let's just say, like 8 to 5:30 at least. So full day, it's miserable. Oh, you can leave for lunch. But here's the thing. So you go in there and there are about 2,500 people in this giant room. It's a giant convention hall. And they make you take the test on these tables that they also use for the, well, yeah, in Ontario, they have this farmer's market. So they've got these terrible tables, and they've got like shards. They don't have splinters. They have shards of wood that are coming out of these tables. And Robbie thinks I'm exaggerating. I know. Robbie, you're a veteran. I have nothing to complain about. But these, they're okay, the shards are so bad that they take masking tape and they tape over them. And so you go in, you take the exam, you do some essays and you do some multiple choice and you do more essays. And then you wait 4 months to get your results. Think about that. 4 months. And there's a test twice a year, one in July and one in February. So if you know anyone in law school that's getting, you know, that's wrapping up, you know, you can start to feel really sorry for them because they're going to disappear. If they do it right, they're going to just disappear for a little bit of time, study hard, take the test once and whatnot. But can you believe it? It was this past February exam was the lowest pass rate in the history of the exam. Only 1/3 of the people taking that test passed it. So I think that's incredible. Wait, Missy, do you think that's crazy? I mean, it's only 1/3 of the people taking the test passed. And these are all people that went to law school. You know, they sat in the same classes that the 1/3 sat in. The 2/3 sat, they more or less, it's, you know, sat in the same classrooms. It's crazy. So, but I think, you know, if you're a member of the public, you're going, okay, this is good. I'm glad. You know, I want my doctor, I want my lawyer, I want the state to really make sure that these guys and gals know what they're doing. Yeah, well, and maybe you'll admit that you want fewer lawyers too, right? So, there it is. At least fewer lawyers on the radio. We'll start with that small tender mercy. So, yeah. So, but you know, you want your doctor to be well qualified. And so you're okay if the state agency is, you know, a little tough on doctors and tough on their lawyers. But as with everything, the state of California, indeed many states, take things a little bit too far. So, surprising categories. So we looked this up here. We had we here at the Sam Nation show had to kind of go through this and make sure that we were actually seeing this right. You know that you need a license to wash someone's hair? Yeah, that's true. You need a license to wash someone's hair. Now, if you're like me, you've been washing your own hair since you were maybe 3 or 4. Okay. So you might have had more than a few hours of experience washing hair. But none of that matters to the state of California because in order to have the light, you need a cosmetology license to wash hair. And to get a cosmetology license, you need 1,600 hours of practical work experience. 1,600 hours. So this is, I mean, just to wash someone's hair. So, you know, this is nuts. This is nuts. And I think what is particularly curious about all this is that it's not always, these licenses are not always flexibly adapting to what we want as customers. And that takes us to the best example of all this nonsense. And that's Uber. Do you Uber? You know what? You probably do. You probably do. And if you don't Uber, somebody that you know has Ubered. And there's also a really good chance that as a consequence of someone that you don't know Ubering, you are alive. Because that person who Ubered didn't drive. And, you know, they look at these statistics. This is important. They say, well, there's taxis. But it's an interesting statistic because there are people who are new to Uber that Uber and never took cabs. And there are people, well, I'm not going to point. Robbie, you want me to out you? Is that what you're asking with that? Well, all right. It's Robbie. I mean, so I'll ask you, Robbie, how many times did you take a cab? You took a cab. Did you ever take a cab before? No. Yeah, so only in New Orleans where they don't allow Uber. And then that's interesting. So how long did it take your 4 hours? So Robbie's in New Orleans and he's waiting 4 hours for a cab until 4 a.m. Weren't you sober by then? I'm just curious. So, I mean, look, that's one technique, you know, just wait long enough and you're good to drive. This is crazy. There's so many people I know Uber and will not touch a cab. And there's some very good reasons for it. Very good reasons for it. I don't know. Let's say this. Cabs are horrible. They're terrible. They smell bad. The drivers are rude. But why are they rude? And I'll tell you why they're rude. And it's interesting because it has to do with licensure. See, the state will always tell you the license protects you. The license protects you. You know, we vet these people. They have to do 1,600 hours of washing people's hair before they can wash your hair. Oh, we vet these taxi drivers. But really what it comes down to is these cab drivers, right? They have, when they get their medallion, when they get that license to operate a cab, they have a property interest in something that the state gives them. I don't want to make this all boring and legal for you. But basically, the state hands them a piece of paper that they paid money for, and that piece of paper guarantees them that they can operate their business in this certain area of business. Okay, they can make money in a certain area. So they operate this cab, and they And that paper can't just be taken away from them for any, you know, willy-nilly. I mean, they're entitled to due process. They're entitled to court review. They're entitled to hearings and this and that. And they feel, and that's the word, right? That's the magic word. They feel entitled. Now, maybe you didn't know any of this licensing bit or whatever, but you certainly have been in a cab where the cab driver acts entitled, haven't you? Yeah, for sure. Entitled a-holes. You get in the cab, they don't talk to you, they don't care, they don't... Why? I'm not going to rate that cab. I'm not going to Yelp. I'm not going to give the cab company a bad Yelp review. Why? Because if you're like Robbie standing on the street corner somewhere in New Orleans and you've been waiting for a cab for 4 hours, are you going to be like, oh no, I'm not going to get into this cab because, you know, they've got a bad Yelp review? No. That cab was licensed by the state or the county, probably the county, okay? And that county determined only X amount of licenses go out. It has nothing to do with supply and demand. It has, no, because if it had anything to do with supply and demand, Robbie would get a cab a lot earlier. No? But, consequently, the guy has no, he's not interested in making Robbie happy as a customer. Not. And this fight, and who's the one that's fighting Uber? And everywhere where we go, it's the cab companies. They are fighting it tooth and nail. Did you hear about this guy in San Diego? Oh, yeah. So he's this. Who is it? He's a state lawmaker, California state law. Yeah, Ben Hueso. When I get back, I'm going to tell you what he did, what happened to him, because he's an avowed fighter against Uber. Let me tell you what this guy did. Back after this. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Well, don't worry. California is not the only kooky state. It's not. You know, there was some incident apparently in Nebraska. Well, and this lady's in serious trouble. She's in serious trouble. And you know what? She was practicing unlicensed horse massage. That's right. In the state of Nebraska, you cannot massage a horse without a license. I guess maybe you can. It's funny, all these laws limiting what you can and can't do with animals. She was charging for it. And apparently, it's considered the unlicensed practice of veterinary medicine. Now, is this just absurd or what? I'm not a horse guy, okay? But I understand from people that have horses is that it's, first of all, everything to do with a horse is really expensive. And you've got people taking care of its hooves and brushing it and cleaning it and washing it, right? I mean, it's just nonstop. So, isn't it fun? I mean, just think about this. Now, imagine you own a horse. And where do you draw the line between brushing a horse, let's say vigorously, and a massage? That begs an important question. Sorry, I was just petting the horse. No, sir, you were not. That was an unlicensed massage. So what is she going to get? Slap on the wrist, you know, pay a fine or whatever. She's facing 20 years. Damn, we don't give 20 years to murderers in California. You know, you have to really be on somebody's bad list to get 20 years in California. Apparently this lady can't even give out advice on how to massage horses. She can't give massages for money. She couldn't even do it for free. And she couldn't even tell friends how to do it. So... These kind of things are happening all over the place. And the absurdity, of course, is, right? The absurdity is that, let's say you're talking about taking care of that horse and there's somebody that goes around massaging your horse and brushing it down and everything. What kind of added protection are you and your horse getting by getting the state involved? The only thing the state is going to do is reduce the number of people out there doing what they do, driving the cost up to you. This is basic econ, guys, right? You got fewer people doing a service. the cost of them performing that service, it'll go up in demand, so the cost is going to go up. Number one. Number two, who's the winner here? Is it you? Is it me? Is it your horse? No, it's the state. This thing is just a giant shakedown racket. I mean, how is this? I mean, how is it any different, really, to paying protection money to the mob? It's not. The mob didn't really protect you. I mean, there's some instances of that, but they don't really protect you. They just protect you from them. That's the joke. The only people being harmed by all of this nonsense are the people that don't pay their protection money, that don't pay their licensing fees, which is why you see absurd stories like this. Robbie, did you see this? Homeland Security helps take down unlicensed massage therapist. So you've got a sheriff's, DuPage County in Illinois, and they're getting backup from Homeland Security. So to help take down unlicensed massage therapists? Are you joking? We have terrorists flooding the border. We have illegal immigrants crossing the border in just record numbers. And Obama has reassigned Homeland Security to go chase down unlicensed massage therapists. Why? The cynicism of the left. Okay? This right here are missing tax dollars. Unlicensed, that's all it is. It's not like these people are out there harming the public. I mean, I get it. You want a licensed neurosurgeon. You want a licensed chiropractor. But you know what? I don't know if I necessarily need somebody to be licensed to spread massage oil on my back. I mean, think about it. What if you could figure out that the cost difference for that license is 30%? And it's 30% cost of a massage. I mean, that could be, what, $30 more? What if that cost differential is a lot? Is that a lot of money? I think so. And so what do you really get from it? What if it's somebody you know and you already know that person and they're a trusted friend or they're a trusted family member and you're paying them for that service? They're breaking the law. And the person, the aggrieved party in that scenario is the state and the state only. So that brings me back to our friend down in San Diego, state senator and Uber nemesis. I mean, Uber's nemesis, I should say. an Uber nemesis of Uber. And what's his name? Ben Hueso. Now, what did good Ben do? Well, so back in August 2014, turns out he's in the midst of just fighting Uber at the state level tooth and nail. And it turns out his two brothers own a taxi company in San Diego. So suspicious, no? What was that? Robbie, what did you say? Yeah, it is coincidental, isn't it? So they own a taxi company. They got a bro up in Sacramento calling him up and saying, hey, dude, kill Uber. You know, we got problems down here. Uber's eating our lunch. And what does Ben do the very next day after he delivers his fiery speech up in Sacramento? He goes out for a night of town and revelry, gets massively drunk. It's the same night. Yeah, same night. Goes out, parties, gets drunk, and decides to drive on the wrong side of the road, gets a massive, big A money DUI. Okay? Now, deserved? Yes. First, that's got to say that. Don't drink and drive. But for realsies, I mean, what is this? Where were his brothers, by the way? That's what I want to know. You can't even get a cab if your brothers own a taxi company. I don't get it. And this is the absurdity of it. You know, I you see it, if you want drunk drivers off the road, what do you want? You want to make alternate transportation easy and cheap. And what's Uber? It's easy and cheap. Hey, we're so lazy now with Uber. I am. When I type in the order, you know, I always, by the way, I always like UberX. I don't know how you are, Robbie. I love UberX. I never do the black car because those guys aren't that nice. I love the regular people that drive Uber. They have the best stories. Talk to your Uber driver. That guy, that gal, he's got a great story. You know, sooner or later, there's going to be a movie. It's going to be, you know, Confessions of an Uber Driver. So So I always love talking to him. But we're conditioned to where if we've got a 12-minute wait time, we're pissed. We're pissed. And then, you know, most places that I go around town when I Uber, I got to be honest, it's like I'm paying $15, $20, $25. I mean, cabs are way more. And they're dirty, and they don't offer you water, and they don't smile at you. And why are Uber drivers so nice? We already explained why crabby cab drivers, they just got their license, and they're all set in their way. They're all set. They don't need you to be satisfied. So why are Uber drivers? Well, because you rate them at the end of the ride. If they're crappy, you can give them 1 star. And that's the thing. They know that. They have to serve you, the customer. And so it's an interesting question. Who protects you better? Does the marketplace protect you better? Or does the government? And it's an interesting thing because the taxi model shows you what happens when the government is protecting you. In the taxi model, the government provides the license, sets certain standards, rules, and regulations that the cab driver has to follow. Half of them he probably doesn't. And then what? Sends the cab driver out there with the license, and the cab driver knows he's going to get business no matter what and doesn't have to try. On the flip side, you've got the marketplace model. And the marketplace model is Uber, where Uber says, hey, come use me. These drivers have to be in good standing with Uber, which I think is a 4-star rating or higher. Higher. 4.2. Okay, so if their reviews, their accumulated average of reviews drops below a certain level, they're out. So who's rating, who's determining the fitness ultimately of these Uber drivers? It's the driver, it's the public, it's you and me. And the state's cut out of it. They're pissed as hell because they're not getting tax revenue. They're not selling these medallions. Do you know how much? Missy, can you guess how much a taxi medallion is in New York City? Well, it's kind of a trick question because the price has plummeted. But I think at its peak, it was $1.2 million. $1.2 million to buy a taxi license in the state of New York City. So and because they were, it was a limited pool of medallions. And to pay $1.2 million just goes to show you how lucrative, right? How lucrative that would be. I mean, that money gets funneled to the state, to the city. Who would want to give that up? Who would want to give that up? And so you've got this craziness with this and the fight against Uber continues. And it's interesting, too. You would be following all these new labor laws. Got some crazy new labor laws. And download the podcast, please, from last week, because we really got into the minimum wage and how it's playing a role in what it's going to do in California. We raised it to $15 an hour. But there's more coming. And Obama is, I'll tell you this, Obama's in a mad rush to now even make, if it's possible, to destroy this economy further, right? We're already in a little bit of a tailspin. We've got all this ridiculous licensing. And now there's a flurry of new regulations that are just gonna tank us. Like the overtime thing. I'm going to talk about that because it affects you. And I'm going to tell you why Obama's doing it this week. And there's a tactical reason. Back after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio. 790 KBC. Well, so you've had a wild, wild night on the town, right? You've partied with all your friends. You're coming home. You get into your Uber and you're driving along and bang, right? And behind, you look behind you and it's a yellow cab. You know, he couldn't take it anymore. He saw the Uber picking up another ride and the guy just went into an apoplectic fit and rear-ended you. And you're shocked, you know, your driver's shocked, you're getting out of the car, your head is spinning. And now, yeah, where do you turn? Do you call Uber? You know, where, you know, who do you even go to? Got the taxi cab company, you know, they're going to fight like mad. So what do you do? Just stop, take a deep breath, and call attorney James Bergner. His friends call him Sweet James. He's a good guy. But he's somebody who's just not afraid to fight. You know, he's fought Uber and won. Because Uber doesn't always do everything right. They screw up. They've got people that screw up. And as much as they, you know, have different ways of fighting those claims, they do pay out, and they have. He's fought taxi cab companies. So real cases. He's handled them. And he's gotten great results for his clients. So just don't hesitate. Don't get too far down the rabbit hole. Just call Sweet James. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Or visit sweetjames.com. So how bad is California? You know, they do the survey of states and their hospitability to business. Where do you think we rank? I mean, we may be the number one most difficult bar exam in the country, but we rank as the 49th best state to do business in. So there you have it. That's a flipping F minus. Robbie, do you know who came in 50th? I want to know that. I think it's probably Hawaii. Yeah, it's Hawaii or New Jersey. Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm going to leave Hawaii alone today. It's Sunday. Just want to take it easy. But, you know, the Hawaii is my whipping boy. You know, actually, not to get off point, but can you imagine, you know, back in the day, do you know that Molokai used to be a leper colony, the island of Molokai? You know this? They would send all the lepers there. This is true. And there's a museum to it. And, you know, Father Damien, the famous priest, the Belgian priest who came to Hawaii, and he tended. He became a saint because he tended, you know, selflessly to these very sick people. What if we turned all of Hawaii into a leper colony for millennials? I'm just saying. You could just kind of like wake up at 10:30, you know, grab a latte frappuccino at Starbucks, kind of go to the beach. There's a lot of great Instagram opportunities there, right? I mean, a lot of good selfies. And the good news is I think there's a welfare office like on every street corner. So you basically can, I mean, it's a paradise for millennials. No, I just, you know. Ruminating here. Well, so California, 49th worst state to do business in. And, you know, and there's, you know, we regulate, this is the thing, we regulate over 200 occupations. So it's not just, you know, surgeons and lawyers and veterinarians. You know, it's people like tree trimmers. My gosh, what the hell? Tree trimmer, animal trainers. Okay, look, here's the thing. If I have a dog and I take him to an animal trainer and the animal trainer isn't getting the job done, I'm done. I take my dog and we go home. Okay? That's what's going to happen. I don't need the state to get involved. We took little Lucy to an animal trainer back in the day. I have a 10-pound miniature long-haired dachshund and she is the love of my life. Did we take her to a little obedience school? We did. We did. Because, you know, we were like first-time doggy parents, you know, doing the whole crazy thing. I have no idea whether that person that we went to was licensed or not. And I'm guessing that if you took your dog to a trainer, you would probably have no idea either. And you know what? You didn't care. Guess what? I didn't care. You know, and we're sophisticated, you know, smart people, you know, in my case, debatable. But I would care if my doctor wasn't licensed. I have a problem with that. I don't really care about my tree trimmer. You know, it's just crazy. What about, you know, like a probably, yeah, beekeepers, everything. It's all requires licensing and it's all under the guise of providing the highest quality professional services. And we know the Uber example, that we talked about in the last segment, where these people who are driving Ubers are way more polite than the cab drivers that are licensed by the state. And we talked about why that is, you know, because that Uber driver really just cares about your rating. It's really important to him. And that rating determines whether he keeps his job or not. Nothing like that exists over on the other side. It's all about the license given out by the state. And ultimately, the state agency is slower to regulate the public, slower to regulate the professional who holds the license than the public is at regulating that place. What's a great example of this? Yelp. Do you actually, I know in LA County, you know, I have always hated this. I even hated it as a kid. I understood viscerally that there was something messed up about it. The letters in the window. Because it's such a con. You give the power of the health, you know, give the health inspector so much power over the business. So here's the deal. In Orange County, you don't have the letters, the inspection letter. You have pass or fail. Okay? And so all the restaurants that are in business that are open all have passes. I would tell you that my guess is that in LA County, most restaurants have A's. So it's kind of, we call that great inflation. All right? So there's a lot of great inflation. Do you give a flying rat's, you know what, about that grate in the window? No, you know what? You probably do. I mean, if you saw an F, you wouldn't walk in. But what do you really care about? You care about the Yelp review. The Yelp review is God. It's God telling you eat here or don't. But you don't. And the Yelp is nothing to do with the government. That's just customers reporting on that restaurant. And in many, many cases, think of Yelp reviewers like 1,000 little health inspectors that all go there. And do they inspect the kitchen? No, they don't. But these are people who are foodies for the most part that eat out a lot. Trust me, if they get sick, if they get food poisoning, they're Yelping it. You know, people like that. It's like, I mean, I really don't Yelp. I don't. But I go there. It's the first thing. If I'm in a city somewhere and I'm first time there, I go to Yelp. See what people have to say about it. And if you see a lot, you know how you look at how many reviews there are and what's the average stars? So if you see 1,000 reviews for a place and 4.5 stars, you're like, yeah, it's a good place. And there is no government entity that can replace that, that can do a better job. And we call that self-policing. It's a basic, fundamental, and now I'm going to say a dirty word, libertarian principle. But the thing is it makes sense. And that's why this is why we always say this show is just about common sense. We don't get into big intellectual discussions. This is just you and I understand intuitively that this is the way it works. And intuitively, we know that all this scheming from the state is just a means of collecting cash and really not protecting us much. So I'm not even getting into how arbitrary it is. Okay. There's a great, I love the show Bob's Burgers. And in Bob's Burgers, if you haven't seen the show, it's a cartoon for grownups. Hilarious, totally funny. And in it, there's the guy, Bob, he runs a restaurant. And he gets shut down by a health inspector who goes in to do an inspection. In the middle of the inspection, discovers what? That he had once dated and loved, but got dumped by Bob's wife. And so now he's got a personal vendetta. So who do you trust deciding where you're going to eat? Do you trust one health inspector who might have had a bad day or might have some personal beef with the owner? Or do you trust 1,000 people that all went to that restaurant and submitted Yelp reviews? I don't know. It's a rhetorical question. If you trust a health inspector more, you're a moron. I have no other way of saying it. So it's because it's so arbitrary. They'll turn people away for licenses for no good reason. So, you know, do you know what? I mean, locksmithing. What does it take to locksmith? I mean, we're one of only 15 states that requires a license for it. And if you try, if you fix a lock, heck, if you're a handyman and you fix a lock for your client, you know, you're a handyman for a family for 10 years and you go and you fix the lock, you could spend up to a year in jail and pay a $10,000 fine. Devastating. This stuff is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And so when we come back, I want to really get to this issue of where all these rules and regulations are, where they're coming from, where they're going. You know, I'm telling you right now, Obama is on a tear. He's on a tear. And the reason is because there's this little rule in Congress. There's this little rule, and it was passed by the Republicans, interestingly enough, back in the Newt Gingrich days. It's a rule that allows for review of executive orders, but sets a time limit on it. And so when we come back, I'm going to tell you when time is up for Obama to get all his crap in. And it... Spoiler alert, it's not soon enough. It's not soon enough. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. And welcome back to your weekend insensitivity training, where we smack you in the face with common sense and offend your traditional notions of, well, I don't even know what. I don't even know what. Robbie, I saw this. Bus. We're gonna have to next week. We're gonna have to talk a little bit about those UC schools again. I've got a funny things to share. But before we get off track, let me tell you something. Obama is in a rush. Is in a major rush to get some things done, and it's not good for us. You know so we know all about this executive order stuff, right? So Obama, executive order, he puts out these rules and regulations. He doesn't go through Congress. He just says, this is the rule, okay? And one of the most recent things that have come out, and it came out this week, is just this devastating rule change that raises time and a half requirements to $48,000 a year. So it was previously set at about 24. So it doubled the annual income threshold for time and a half. What does this all mean? It means that previously, in order for you to qualify for overtime, you'd have to make less than $24,000 a year. Okay? So your employer could let's say pay you $30,000 a year, okay? And as soon as he paid you $30,000 in salary, you then would not be eligible to make overtime, which basically means you could make $30,000 a year and work 10 hours a day instead of just 8. And there would be no extra compensation. Now, if you are a Bernie supporter, you're looking at this and you're going, well, this is outrageous. This is terrible. This is exploitative. But if you're a normal person who's risen through a company and maybe achieved some success, you quickly recognize that buried in that sort of setup and it almost seems a little bit unfair, doesn't it? It almost seems a little bit unfair, but buried in that is some of your story. You worked somewhere for $30,000 a year. And you know what? You worked 12 hours a day while the clown that sat next to you worked 8.5, 7.5, something around there. But you worked longer, you worked harder, and you did it. Why? You didn't do it because you were excited to get exploited. You did it for you. You did it so you could get ahead. You did it so your boss would see that you were one bad, hardworking guy or gal. You did it to stand out. And guess what? It worked. I know it did for me. I always worked harder than everybody else. I mean, that's what you do. I realize this is a microaggression, okay? So for all you millennials out there, I'm sorry. This program does not recognize microaggressions. We only practice in macroaggressions, so there it is. Hard work gets you ahead. Let that sink in. And any rule that the government puts out there that interferes in this very important give and take, because it's not just your give to your employer then gives you back the experience, the credibility. You succeed at your job. Maybe you don't end up taking over that company, but now you've got 3-4 years on your resume and you're getting great, you know, your manager, yeah, this guy worked really hard. And sometimes that endorsement alone is what makes your resume float magically to the top of the stack when you're applying for your next job. These things really do matter. And the thing is, and we got into the whole minimum wage last week. And so again, download the podcast, samnation.com. You can download it there and listen to it, because you got to understand what this minimum wage is going to do here in California. You got to understand it. And you also got to understand why we can't have a national minimum wage. And that whole conversation about the national minimum wage is really what's so absurd about these time and a half rules. Because this time and a half rule may be, because we're dealing with a floor. We're dealing with a level that's it's very arbitrarily set. Tell me, please, $48,000 a year is nothing in San Francisco. But $48,000 a year in DeKalb, Illinois, or in some, you know, Peachtree, Georgia, it's a fortune. It's a livable wage. Like if you make 50 grand a year in San Francisco, I mean, you probably are sleeping on the street. Or you're living, you know, 20 miles outside of the city. You're taking BART in. That's the reality. But if you are making that kind of money in another part of the country, in a rural part of the country, you're living like a king. In fact, and I know producer Robbie and I have talked about this when he was in Georgia, he was stationed with the military, and he had friends that how much were they making? And they bought a house. They bought a house for $125,000, and it was really a new construction, nice, you know, middle class house. We don't even. That's, you know, if you're listening to this program, you're listening to a house for that kind of money. You can't even wrap your mind around it. We can't. So what's good for the goose is not good for the gander. What's good here in California, as locally as Orange County or LA County or in San Francisco, is not necessarily what's good in rural Georgia. It's not, or rural Texas. And when the Labor Department comes out and arbitrarily raises this number, who does it help? Well, it captures a lot more income for the state. And that's one thing you have to remember. And it goes back to what this licensing stuff? Does that really, all these licenses, are they really helping you and me? Or are they just putting money into the government's hands? And the reality is, there's just no theoretical support, no empirical evidence that this proposed rule change is going to meet any of the stated objectives of getting people up out of, you know, poverty and helping workers. In fact, employers are going to do one of two things. Actually, one of three. They're either going to say you can only work 40 hours a week, and there goes your chance to go and prove yourself to your employer. I mean, if you're a hard worker, imagine getting shooed away from your desk. Say, nope, 5 o'clock, you've got to leave right now. That would have killed me. That would have killed me. I can't even opt out of it. That's right. You don't have the freedom to do that. This is supposed to be America. So think about that. Two, you get fired, right? Because your employer is going to go, you know, heck, I don't, you know, I'm just going to go and pay time and a half to this person over here because that's the hard worker. And you know what? You're the guy leaving at 7.5 hours in, 8 hours in. I see you. You're gone. You slacker. Because this person works. I'm going to pay time and a half to this person. They're going to work, 10 hours a day. And they're going to fit in the productivity of two people. And guess what? Who gets hurt in all of that? It's the slackers that weren't working time and a half. That's the reality. And then finally, the last option is that they just raise your salary by a little bit, you know, and just get around it. And so and that money has to come from somewhere. So maybe they lower your benefits. Maybe they take away some vacation time. Maybe they take away. I mean, there's a lot of things I can tell you creatively. There are ways as an employer that I can move money around. And maybe we don't have as great of a Christmas party. You know, maybe there are things there. Maybe I take away cell phone privileges or I take away car allowances. There's a way to balance that budget. And it's not, a budget is a zero-sum game. When you have a budget, the dollars have to come from somewhere. And you can't keep hitting business this way. So anecdotally, I'm out last night and I'm at a restaurant and I see, I won't name him, but I see a friend of mine who is a business owner, a restaurant owner, and he happens to be Hispanic. And he sits down and he says, I'm done. I really hope Trump becomes president because I just can't take this Obama-Clinton nonsense anymore. It's going to put me out of business. There is a guy who employs 70 people. Think about that. He employs 70 people. And he is looking at this regulation and he knows, he doesn't have to talk to his accountant. He just knows that this is not going to be good for him and not going to be good for other people in the business. And so this really should be really, this should be important to you. Even if you make more than $48,000 a year, this doesn't apply to you. Because it applies to everything that you touch in this economy. It's all interrelated. It's all connected. And Obama, he's not done. The scary thing is under this rule change that the Republicans put in, 15 years ago, they basically made it so that when an executive action happens, there is a 60-day window. Now, it's not 60 calendar days. It's 60 legislative days. A 60-day window where Congress can easily overturn it. And after that, it gets complicated. So it first came out that the deadline, they've got to figure out how many legislative days there are going to be until the end of Obama's term. They're actually figuring this out. And they first thought it was May 2nd, and then it got bumped back to May 23rd, May 24th, and now it's been bumped back to early June. So listen, if you're a common sense person, because I'm telling you, on this program, I'm here to tell you this is insanity. This is going to literally drive a stake into an economy that's already sputtering. And it also, I'll tell you this, it confirms something very important. And that is that a lot of smart cookies, a lot of the smart people in Obama's administration, and know that he's, love him or hate him, he's surrounded by sharp operatives. He realizes that Trump is going to win in November. And he is doing everything he can to Trump-proof his legacy. And it's dangerous. And if there was ever a time to, maybe you didn't support Trump. Maybe he wasn't your top pick candidate. Maybe he wasn't. But you cannot count on Hillary to overturn this nonsense. You can't. She won't do it. She won't. These are her people too. And this, the only way to get over this lunacy is to be like my friend who's, doesn't like all the nasty things Trump says, but he gets that Trump at least understands business and what it takes to make America run. So fight back with some common sense. Or kiss your favorite restaurant goodbye. Whatever. So, hey, please, we've got a lot of great content on our site. Go to samnation.com. Also, we are on Twitter. And I got a lot to say. So 2 hours isn't nearly enough. Go to Twitter, Sam Nation Show, at Sam Nation Show. And then Instagram, at Sam Nation. That's it, folks. Back on Saturday, next Saturday at 3. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.